Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel. I'm Mark. Jeremy. It is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hope you enjoyed your weekend. Hope you had a great Halloween yesterday. Did you get out and trick-or-treat a little bit?
Yep. Happy birthday to my dear sweet Maddie Bunkin. Madison turned 2 on Saturday, so we had birthday party on Saturday. Trick-or-treating on Sunday. Lisa took the girls around the neighborhood. I was able to hold down the fort giving out candy so I could keep an eye on the games, including the World Series game. And can I just say, kids these days, they don't know their boundaries.
Huh.
We had a big plastic jack-o'-lantern with all the candy in it, and I would give, and I was very generous in giving handfuls of candy to every kid, right?
Yeah.
I had multiple kids, by the way, with your volume. I had multiple kids that did like the hang on the rim dunk shot on the jack-o'-lantern, pulled it down, and said, no, I want this, this, and this. I was like, hey, buddy, you just got a handful. Slow down. You got enough. Lisa had girls that were going, I want, can I have a lollipop? She goes, sure, take one. She took 5. Like, these kids, like, they don't know their boundaries anymore.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. I had the same thing. The son went out to trick-or-treat with the family. I stayed back and handed out candy. I will say this for all my neighbors.
Yeah.
Great job not trick-or-treating once the Astros game started. I didn't get one trick-or-treater after first pitch.
We did.
We got some good neighbors.
See, we eventually just went to, from porch light on and all the decorations. And, you know, Maddie goes to bed at, like, 8, or before 8. So we don't want any more doorbells after that because it'll wake her up. So Lisa's like, what do we do? What do we do? Just put the whole, she goes, just put the whole jack-o'-lantern on the porch and tell them to take 2. I go, first of all, they're not taking 2. And I'm not doing that. So eventually she goes, well, what about the decorations? We got the whole yard full of decorations. I go, here's what we do. Next commercial of the baseball game, I will go gather all the decorations up and put them in the garage. I was like, you turn the porch light off and all the lights in the house and we'll just have the TV on. And that worked.
Yeah. Turn off the porch light. They shouldn't come trick-or-treating. That's like the rules of trick-or-treating.
How many did you get? Did you get a lot?
There was quite a few, yeah.
Us too.
There was a lot out there.
And they came in droves. Like if one doorbell ring was at least 5 to 7 kids. And some of them, by the way, again, I'm going to say this like I do every year. If you're over the age of 16, you have no business trick-or-treating. And let's also stop the false front that when you bring an infant under the age of 2, let's be honest, mom and dad, you're eating the candy. It's for you.
Yeah, but they have an infant that's under 2, so they probably deserve the candy. If I think you're too old, I just give you the one piece of candy. Astros.
What?
Yeah, if you're 16 years old and you're trick-or-treating.
You're shutting it down like that?
I'll punish the kid, yeah. If they're too old to be trick-or-treating, yeah, send a message.
Wow.
Give them like a Tootsie Roll. That's it. You shouldn't be trick-or-treating.
I send the message cheap. more than shutting it down. Okay, fine.
We didn't have anybody that was that old, though, so that was good. Meanwhile, as soon as everybody was done trick-or-treating, the Atlanta Braves were up 4-0 after the first inning, and it looked like the Astros World Series run was going to come to an end. Not the case. The Astros would battle back, two in the second, two in the third. They tied it up before Freddie Freeman homered in the third, gave the Braves the lead again. But then the Astros, a three-run fifth, tack one on in the seventh, tack one on in the eighth. Braves did not score another run after that Freddie Freeman solo shot in the third inning. And the Astros bringing the World Series back to Houston. Look, still a little disappointing that the Astros are down 3-2. Game four was one that was very winnable. Well, you're up by two runs. You give up the back-to-back homers late in the game. The Braves steal that victory from the Houston Astros. So the Astros, though, fighting off elimination yesterday at the very minimum, forcing another game in Houston.
I cannot tell you the range of emotions from the weekend because, like you said, game four, for seven innings, or what, virtually seven innings, I thought they were in control of the game. They were going to win the game. This was exactly the scenario we needed because I said all along on Friday, last thing we needed was going into game five in a do-or-die situation just to get it back to Houston. And I thought that they had escaped having to do that with game four, and everything was looking great. And then of all people, Christian Javier, who's been lights out, who's been fantastic, and you're just like, wow, where did that come from? And then it was like all the air was just out of the sails. But then you see, okay, you got a kid starting his first major league game in the World Series. Stage is going to be big. Jump on him early. And they don't capitalize. And then right away with the grand slam, I got to be honest, there were thoughts that were this whole thing was over.
I think I pretty much resigned myself to the fact that the season was over yesterday.
It was a tough feeling.
And it was frustrating, too, because, look, that play that was the ground ball that was hit to Bregman in the first, that was a tough play. But Bregman Absolutely. Misplayed it. If you ask Alex Bregman if he should have made that play, he would tell you that he should make that play. He'd be the first person that would tell you that. So it was disappointing the fact that you didn't get the out there. Then Framber Valdez walks the lefty. Eddie Rosario prolongs the inning. And then Duvall hits the grand slam. So you felt kind of snake bit right there off the bat. You don't get a play at third. Would have been a good play, but you don't get that play made by Bregman. Then you walk Rosario when you have the lefty on lefty matchup to leave him loaded. And then it felt like the Red Sox in games two and games three with Duvall hitting the grand slam. So that was a frustrating inning because you felt like you could have been out of it. To Alex Bregman's credit, he was able to knock in a run with that double, kind of spark things in the second inning, atone for the, I don't know if I'd call it a mistake, but just didn't make that play there in the first, and then it was off to the races for the Houston Astros offense. Hopefully, it's the spark that the Astros needed, and they can go on and win three in a row. That was the big news before the game, was the lineup change. Alex Bregman dropping from 3-7, Correa moving up from the 5-hole to the 3-hole, Correa up from the 7-hole to the 5-hole. What'd you make of those changes before the game?
You know what? I wasn't really for them because he hadn't done it to this point. Once you get to this point, I think you at a certain point, it's a point of no return where you just keep doing what you've been doing. And Dusty's a gut feeling guy, and he didn't change it. But, you know, to his credit, it worked. And I don't know that, you know, you just say it worked because he made the switch. But for whatever the reason, he got out of it exactly what he had to because they were getting absolutely zero production at the top of the lineup. They were getting zero production from three of their massive bats that they had to have, and at least they got something from them. But other than that, I think the only thing that I really took of it that I liked was that Bregman kind of relaxed a little bit. I think that for whatever the reason, hitting in the three hole, it provided so much. He was so much more uptight. You saw glimpses. You didn't see him completely, you know, peel the curtain back on being the old cocky Alex Bregman again. But right off the top, when he got the double, the emotion he showed at second base, the way that he was really, you know, getting into it, you're like, well, if the move didn't work for any other reason, I want that Alex Bregman back. I like that Alex Bregman a lot more.
Yeah, he didn't have some great at-bats the rest of the way, right, though. The first pitch swinging popped it up on the infield. So a little concerning of where Bregman's at, very concerning where Bregman's at right now. I didn't love the move either, dropping him in the order. In fact, I thought to the point where if you're going to drop him in the order, you might as well bench him. Because you start to lose a guy mentally, and I think Bregman's already lost, too.
Right.
If you're going to move him from the 3-hole to the 7-hole, you might as well just bench him. I've liked the at-bats you've had from Diaz in this series. Now, Alex Bregman kind of made me eat crow on that because he did have the big hit. They were also walking him to get to Maldonado, and Maldonado ended up having a good game, too. So it worked out all right for Dusty Baker making that switch yesterday. And then Martin Maldonado was just absolutely – look, he only had one hit. He was 1-for-3, but he had the sacrifice fly.
Which was big.
It was huge. And it kept Framber in the game for an extra inning. He had the bases loaded walk against A.J. Minter whenever he just basically was as far on the plate as you could. So he took that cutter away. You could tell that it messed with Minter as well. Got the RBI walk that tied the game. Then had the big hit, the RBI single that made it a three-run game later in the seventh inning. Martin Maldonado yesterday was just a hero for the Houston Astros.
As much as you go over the top on your love of Correa and call him the smartest guy in the game, you got to give something to the baseball IQ of Martin Maldonado because, again, and it took Smoltz picked it up eventually, but the fact that he squeezed Minter, just the fact that he put that extra pressure, because in the back of your mind as the left-handed pitcher throwing that cutter and throwing the breaking stuff that dives hard towards the back foot of a hitter, he knows in the back of his mind that he is going to be very cognizant of not wanting to hit him and no place to put him. And he squeezed him, and it was phenomenal. And Correa talked about it after the game, the fact that it was such a savvy move. But this is kind of why you hear so many people throwing accolades all the time at Martin Maldonado, regardless of how low his batting average is, because he's a gamer. His baseball IQ is ridiculous. Correa talked about during the year how much extra time he spends sitting in his room, going over video, charting everything on every hitter to know exactly where to pitch them. And it's a valuable, valuable resource to have, especially with the pitching staff just completely up in the air, the way the Astros have had to deal with it since the loss of McCullers. He absolutely proved his wealth times 10 last night to keep this series going, and you got to tip your cap.
Yordan Alvarez struggling a little bit. I've seen a lot of talk from people wanting him now dropped in the order because it seemed to have worked last night. I don't agree with that. Yordan Alvarez is one of your best sluggers. He had it going in the ALCS, and this is who Yordan is. Yordan's a little feast or famine. He had that last at bat he had yesterday was just awful. But you hope that a day off for Yordan Alvarez coming back to the friendly confines could be something that helps him out. I'm not in favor of dropping Yordan Alvarez in the batting order at all in game six. He's still that slugger in the middle of the order, but he did struggle in yesterday's game. You hope that he can get that figured out.
Yeah, you hope so. People are going to say, oh, it's the wall, it's the knee, it's the collision that did all this. No, he was struggling well before this. As good as he was against the Red Sox, he has been absolutely awful in the World Series, and he's not alone. I mean, look, Correa's gotten a few hits, you know, and yesterday really helped him. But when you look at it, through going into last night's game, Correa had, what, two hits in the World Series. Bregman had one. Altuve was struggling. You know, you look at, and Yordan's struggling. So as good as this offense had been all year long, you can point the finger very easily at the reason why this team is in the position that it's in, as opposed to, and you look at, in close games, runners and scoring. But last night, finally, with two outs, they did it again. They started doing what they had done against the Red Sox. They did all playoffs. They were scoring two-out runs. They were getting key base hits, and everybody was contributing. But up until then, the World Series has been just complete opposite in a contrast to what they've been doing the rest of the playoffs, and that's why they're in the hole that they were in and still continue to be behind in this series.
Yeah, frustrating weekend for the Astros. They do bring home – they do steal home field advantage back, less meaningful in baseball than it is like in the NBA, but they do take the home field advantage back. You go back to the third game of the series where Ian Anderson was outstanding, 5 no-hit innings. The offense just didn't get anything going. We mentioned how the game on Saturday went where the Astros, they had the 2-run lead early, just couldn't hold on to it. Kind of interesting, too, in that game, the way that Dusty Baker used his bullpen, going to Stanek early and then using Christian Javier late when usually it's flipped. Usually Javier's the bridge to the guys in the 7th, 8th, and 9th when Stanek, Graveman, and Presley. Interesting how he used it. It looked to me like Dusty kind of wanted to go with using the high leverage guy in the batting order, which is something that we've seen. Dusty actually mentioned that he just kind of felt like Stanek was the guy that was ready in that spot, and Christian Javier just wasn't ready yet, which is something we heard a lot in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we've talked about throughout, but I absolutely think it bit Dusty in the butt for all the right moves that he's pushed with the bullpen all playoffs and how many guys have stepped up every single time he's called a number where we might be questioning calling that number. That was one that I think that if he had to do again, he would revisit simply because of the fact that it took everybody out of their natural order. And even Javier, you know, you could tell that he was rushing to get ready. He just, no matter how much he thought he had time, he didn't. When he came in, for whatever the case may be, he just grooved a couple of pitches. The thing that I always hate, though, and you and I have always been on the same page on this, is when you're ahead in the count, there's no way you should be throwing hittable pitches. But it just seems like from an – and I don't know if that's something that Strom is really working with them on or not. But too many times in the playoffs, too, I've seen the Astros pitchers be ahead 0-2, 1-2 and still just kind of try and get too cute with pitches where, you know what, it's okay to waste another one. But the last thing you need to do is be picture perfect and make a mistake because of it when you're pitching in those situations, too. But I completely agree with you. I think he used Stanek too early. I think Javier, for whatever reason, wasn't ready and didn't look the same and made the key mistakes. And that's one that is just absolutely, as an Astros fan, excruciatingly painful because they had that game.
All right, just getting started. If you want to get involved in the Astros conversation, you can call or text 713-780-ESPN. How you feeling with the Astros? Able to salvage the one game in Atlanta, survive to bring it back to Houston. Two games coming up at Minute Maid Park if they can win Game 6. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, number to call, number to text. On Twitch at twitch.tv/ESPN975, and on Twitter, he's at Pac-Man Joel, and I'm at Jeremy Brannon. We'll keep the Astros conversation going. We return. It's Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about New Brakes. Love New Brakes because of the fact they did my brakes. They did them here at the station while we did a show. It was painless. They did it quickly. They did it professionally. They did a fantastic job, and literally, it saved me so much time, and that itself saves you money. They do it for all the listeners, too, and it's real simple. You go to nubrakes.com and sign up. You mention ESPN 97.5, you're going to save 10%, but it's more so the other savings you're going to get than the 10% that's going to make a difference to you. First and foremost, certified technicians come to your job, come to your house, come to wherever you are. They do your brakes while you're doing whatever you got to get done during the day. So you're already saving time, which is money, by doing other things. Then they're not going to try and upsell you on anything else because all they do is brakes. They use the same parts and do the same quality work as any brake shop, but you don't have to sit in a waiting room. You're not at the mercy of a mechanic that's going to take his time. And you're going to also realize that the work that they do is certified technicians doing it as good as anybody else. And so, therefore, you save so much time in your day. You could be at a meeting at work that you didn't want to miss. You don't have to. They come to your parking garage. You could be at the house, cutting the lawn, watching a game. You don't have to worry about your brakes getting done or going to a brake shop because they're doing it in the driveway. They're doing it in the garage. They're fixing your brakes. They take care of you every single step of the way and take so much out of the middleman process that drives you crazy and takes up your time, which is valuable. Check them out today, newbrakes.com. Mention ESPN 97.5, save 10%. But take it from me, take it from all of our listeners that have went to New Brakes. There's only one place to get your brakes done these days. It's NUBrakes, newbrakes.com.
Well, hello!
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is a tie game, 5-5. Here in the fifth inning, and the first pitch to Gonzalez, a swing and a little flare, left field, and it drops for a base hit. Gurriel in to score, Bregman behind him. To second, and stopping there is Maldonado. Gonzalez with a pinch hit two-run single, and the Astros have taken a 7-5 lead.
Well, Marwin knew exactly.
Marwin Gonzalez coming off the bench for the Houston Astros. Nice of Dusty to finally use him as a righty, by the way. Used him twice in the World Series as a lefty, and he's terrible as a lefty. So that was nice to see. But look, this is a guy that was basically the last addition to this roster, right? Jake Myers was injured. Marwin Gonzalez was placed on the World Series roster, was not on the DS roster, was not on the LCS roster either, and he delivered. He delivered for the Houston Astros, kind of clutch. He's always been clutch with the Astros, and he was clutch yesterday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you started thinking about it because Zach Greinke was the first pinch hitter off the bench, and you thought, well, God, I mean, how are the rest of these guys feeling if Dusty's going to Greinke early in the game and then Greinke delivers a base hit and you're like, okay, well, now there's a little bit of pressure on everybody else to come into the game and perform. But I had said to you before the series started when they knew that they weren't going to have Jake Myers and they put Marwin on the roster, I just felt like there was going to be one at-bat, one time, and it might have just been one at-bat in the whole series, but I felt like Marwin was going to have an at-bat in the series that matters and he was going to do something. Lo and behold, it happened last night, and it couldn't have happened at a better time because there's a guy that, as much as we're very cognizant of, that basically he should be out of baseball. Let's be honest. He should be out of baseball. If he didn't have a relationship with Carlos Correa and some of the guys left in this Astros locker room, he had played himself out of the major leagues. And instead, Correa goes to Click. They work out a deal to bring him in. and he finds his way onto the taxi squad and event, you know, finishes September, gets on the taxi squad. Now, because of injuries, he's in. And you look at all this and you say, the one thing that I kept harping on was at least he's not going to strike out. We've seen too many of those Diaz at bats when he comes in a big situation, cold off the bench, and he just doesn't have the bat speed and he gets overmatched and strikes out. Marwin at least can put the bat on the ball, and you make a great point. From the right side is his better side of at least he's a contact hitter. And that's what you're looking for in a situation like that, if nothing else. And he comes through. It wasn't a laser. It was by any means. It was just a loop single that did exactly what it was supposed to do. And good for him, because you know what? He persevered. He capitalized on his opportunity. Couldn't have come at a better time for the Astros. And if there's one fan base in America that's always going to embrace Marwin, it's here. And so he, again, strengthened his legacy with the Astros by getting that timely hit.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chef Jay, you're in the high with the Killer Bees.
What's going on, fellas, man? Thanks for having me back again, man. Just a couple points, man. And you guys kind of touched on it right before I got on. How huge was Marlon Gonzalez last night, man? That was a huge play. A lot of people questioned us picking him up. Why are we doing this? He's like you guys said, he played himself out of the league, and he stepped in and made one of the biggest plays of the World Series. And if the Astros win this, I really think you should look back at that play that he made, that 2-run single that he hit, man. Secondly, Jordan is not hitting the ball well, but he's also a horrible outfielder. And I look back at the game on Saturday. If he makes that catch that went out, he could have made that catch. If it was a different outfielder would have made that catch. You saw what was that Rosario? I forgot who that was who made that catch for the Braves.
You're right.
Yeah, Eddie Rosario.
That same catch. If Jordan makes that catch, we might win that game. That's a whole entirely different game, man. And then lastly, I'm glad Dusty listened to me. I did love the fact that he moved Bregman. I thought, you know, as weird as it sounds, I thought that Bregman should have led off. I think he's a better leadoff hitter than Altuve. I made that point last week. But needless to say, it shook him up. He listened. Did he have the best game in the world? No, but again, he had a big hit, man. All right, guys. Thanks so much, man.
Appreciate the call,
Chef. I mean, Dusty loves your heat. That's why he gets in your kitchen. That's why you made took the chance to change it up. He listened to you. You got the results. It's fantastic.
You just couldn't help. Just because of a terrible pun.
I mean, that's what I do.
Couldn't help yourself with that pun there. Look, Jordan could have made that play. It would have been an unbelievable play if he made it. It looked like it might have tipped the top of his glove. I thought he might have got a piece of it.
It depends on the angle. I thought it still had too much length from between the wall and where it landed that I didn't think he could elevate enough. The only thing I would have said is, and an experienced outfielder, find the wall first. And then you can climb the wall.
I don't know if he had time. I don't know if he had time to get to the wall first.
Well, because he was going 100 miles an hour.
It would have been an unbelievable play. It was not a play that a normal outfielder makes either.
No, you're right.
That would have been a great play. I thought he had a shot. He almost made the play, but I'm not going to say that he should have made that play by any stretch of the imagination.
Here's the thing, to Chef Jay's point. There were two other plays that were completely misplayed without making an error with his mitt. From Jordan. I mean, missing cutoffs and throwing to the wrong base or thinking that you can get a guy at home plate when no one says that you've got a cannon out there and it's accurate and that you are, you know, a defensive outfielder instead of keeping the lead run from going to second base.
Yep.
Just smart baseball plays like that. Hit the cutoff, man. You know what? Whether someone's yelling or not, you got to know in the back of your head, unless I got a legit shot at the plate, my main objective here is to keep the guy on first base. Those are the kind of little things where we had said to this point, before we went to the National League Park, we hadn't seen anything that threw up a red flag and said he shouldn't be out there as an outfielder. But part of being an outfielder, whether it be the coaching and or on-field guys talking to him and in the back of his head being a baseball guy with intelligence enough to know, I got to know where I'm going with this ball before it's hit to me.
He had one of those yesterday, too. I think it was in the first inning, whenever Ozzie Albies was going first to third, and then he threw it to third base when he had no chance.
Riley went
right to second base when he could have just thrown it to second. Yep. You have runners in the corners. Now, it wouldn't have mattered because it landed and hit a grand slam a little bit later in the inning. But it's those little plays that Jordan really struggles with. He can catch a fly ball.
Yep.
But knowing how to play the position, he just hasn't played there enough. But the Astros won't have to worry about that the rest of the series. Going back to the AL Park, and of course, you'll have the DH. James in Utah texting in, 713-780-3776. Astros didn't take BP or on-field practice for games 3 and 4 due to weather. They looked tight, and it was colder conditions that they usually play in. Not making excuses, but ball players are creatures of habit and routine. I think this played into the bats going cold. What say you? I don't know if I'd go that far. I don't think it changed the game. I don't think it affected the game. I still think the Astros probably lose those games that they lost. But me as a hitter and having played, you have played as well, having the taking live BP, it's not so much like the timing. It's not so much the creature of habit. To me, it's more of the look with the backdrop, like seeing where the pitch is going to be coming in compared to the backdrop. But to me, it's not insignificant. I don't think the significance is that great. But yes, you rather have taken live BP at that ballpark for the first time in 3 years as opposed to not taking live BP.
I think it's just it is familiarity and comfort is all that's about, right? I think that it gives you a chance as guys playing outfield for the first time in that park in live batting practice when balls are hit at a pretty high rate of speed that you can tell how they carry them off the padding, how they carry them off of certain places on the wall, that you can learn something from that. From the guys in terms of from in the batter's box to where the ball's carrying. Look, we constantly hear from Smoltz about where the power alleys of carry are from, you know, down the left field line and then everything hit to right field. And we saw the home run, the first home run by Swanson was just simply put a guy that had played in that park all year long and knew that if he stayed back on a ball and pushed it towards right field, that you can catch a wind tunnel and you can carry it out. And that's a factor. You know, some people are saying from a gamesmanship perspective, well, when the Braves come here now, that they should say no batting practice on the field, make the Braves do the same thing. Look, that was weather-driven.
And they've already had it.
But, yeah, that's true. They've already played in the park as well, is a good point. But the major issue here is that this wasn't the Braves using gamesmanship against the Astros. This was weather dictating that the field was going to get ruined, and with the weather, you had to keep the infield covered. So it wasn't like, look, I lived through the Warriors, Rockets, Steph Gate, when Steph wanted to use the floor to warm up, or the practice court of the floor to get shots up the night before a game. And everybody said it was Chris Paul. It was Harden that told everybody in the building to not let Steph do it. It fired the Warriors up. There was a ton of words exchanged before, during, and after because of it. And it became a big deal. You'd like to say it was that, you know, I know you like your drama, and this could have been a soap opera and drama like that, but it's not. This was a Major League Baseball decision with the Braves because of the weather.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't tear up the field. You had to have the field tarped. I mean, there was rain in Atlanta, but to me, it does matter. Not sure it matters enough where the Astros take one of those games, but as a hitter, you have to feel more comfortable in the box having that backdrop behind you and having seen pitches with that backdrop behind you as well. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, how discouraged are you about the Texans? The scenes and the sights we saw yesterday from NRG? Boy, it's sad. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll get to the sad state of affairs that is the Houston Texans and people losing interest left and right in just a little bit. But first, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Cole, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. I was just calling in to get your opinion on the playoff format as far as goes for the 2-3-2 with the first two games being at home and then going away for three. You know, I really see that being an advantage for the visiting team. All you have to do is split the first two games and then you're going back home with three straight games. So I wanted to get you guys' opinion on that format.
Cole is kind of breaking out there a little bit, but I understood the question. He's saying that for the team that does not have the home field advantage in a seven-game series, it's pretty punitive that all three of the middle games are at that ballpark. I mean, we see it, two games at home, three games on the road, two games at home. And basically you win one of those three games, you take the home field advantage back. Even if the visiting team won one of the first two games in game one or two, home field advantage just doesn't matter as much in baseball as it does in the other sports. And it's also a sport of series, right? I mean, all season long, you play for the most part three-game series, so I'm not sure that you can do anything else. You couldn't do it like the NBA, where you play two games in Houston, two games in Atlanta, one in Houston, one in Atlanta, one in Houston. Too much travel involved for what is a game that's built upon series and best of threes and things like that. It is something I've thought about in the past, Cole, and I think it is more punitive to have all three of those games at home in the middle if you're the team that does not have the home field advantage to start the series, because like you said, it's much easier in baseball to take one of those three. So I believe that it is punitive. There's just nothing else you can do about it, in my opinion.
I mean, look, this whole thing started, the thing that's crazy about the format that I think they need to change is the same reason why the NBA has evaluated doing it differently. It was at a time these changes were created to the finals and to the World Series because of the fact that travel was getting to be too expensive. Because at the time, the league wasn't rolling in the finances. Either league wasn't rolling in the finances that they are currently. Sometimes they were still flying commercial. So the bigger thing was to go back and forth, jet setting in most cases across the country, at least at half the country, back and forth in between games was just not conducive. That now we're at a different point in time where the money's free flowing. The charters can get you there in a heartbeat and get you back, and it's not as big of a deal. I think it's more enticing, and it's easier to do in basketball because you don't worry about pitching, right? The more difficult thing is, are you going to still have the off days in between? Because it's one thing to say you play two, have an off day. You play three, you have an off day. You only have two off days the entire World Series, but you also then can have some wiggle room with rain. From a pitching perspective, you can't have too many games in between because now you give the advantage to whatever team has a starting pitcher that they want to bring back on short rest or bring back to have multiple starts in a series. And I think that's something baseball thinks about, too. Like, that's just not fair.
And plus, you have to keep it up to the spirit of what the game actually is, right? I mean, NBA, you're playing one game, one offers all the time. You're not going to play series for anybody unless you're the Rockets playing a two-game series against the Lakers in L.A. But all those games are one offers. Baseball, you go to town to play a series. You got to keep it what it is throughout the rest of the – like, even in the playoffs, it needs to reflect the regular season a bit. And even two off days over, like, a seven-day period is something you don't even see in the regular season. So, in my opinion, there's nothing you can do about that. Texans yesterday falling to the Rams 38-22. It really wasn't that close, by the way. The Rams were up 38-0 after three quarters. The Texans went on a streak of 37 straight offensive possessions without a touchdown that finally came to an end in the fourth quarter once the Rams pulled their starters. Davis Mills had a big fourth quarter. Look, I don't even want to talk about the fourth
quarter. You shouldn't.
Because the Rams pulled their starters. And like you heard all the postgame sound. Oh, we fought hard. We didn't quit. We tried really hard. We loved the way that we finished. The Rams pulled their dudes. That was like all of their backups. They were getting some work in. It cost better some money, by the way, because the Rams were up 38-0 after three in what was somewhere between a 16-20-point spread. And then the Texans make it a 16-point game, one of the biggest backdoor covers of all time. Just a sad state of affairs. I mean, the one angle you look at it, the Texans' on-field product, not good. Rock bottom in terms of the organization. And then you start to look at everything else. Like, the interest level can usually be gauged on a bunch of different things. One, how's the tailgate doing? Tailgate scene was abysmal yesterday at NRG. How about the fans? The fans were, I mean, it was less than a half full. We had more people at the Houston, Texas Tech game to start the season than there were at Texans Rams yesterday. Then you had Vanessa Richardson of Channel 2 tweeting out how, like, she was the only TV person in the city that was even there covering the team. The interest level for the Houston Texans, I mean, it's an all-time low. It really is an all-time low because at least when they were the expansion team, Houston Texans, hey, football's back. This is exciting. We know we're not going to be very good, but at least that we haven't had any stain on the franchise yet. Now you have all the stain. You have a lousy product. You have an owner you don't love. You have Jack Easterby hanging around as well. I mean, this is rock bottom in terms of interest in the city for the Houston Texans.
Good. And they deserve every bit of it because the arrogance that this franchise has had for far too long was the fact that we can do whatever we want and you are just going to deal with it. And you are still going to buy your tickets and you're going to buy your merchandise and you're going to be a Texans fan because you're a Texan and this is a football state and this is what we do. So therefore, that's where you're going to be and you're going to stay there. And finally, after it took so long and it was so drawn out and so many people fought it, when they threatened to give up their season tickets, when they threatened to burn their jerseys, but they didn't do it, when they threatened to just stop supporting this team, and they first blamed it on, I won't do anything until Bill O'Brien leaves. Well, he left, and they still stuck around, and then Easterby was just too much to take, and all the bad hires and bad moves and things that they've gone through since, including, you know, Jack, starting with Jack Easterby sticking around, but then with David Culley, and we said the jury's still out on Caserio. People just finally just turned their backs once and for all and said, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm just done. And this time I mean it, and this time I'm going to do it. And now they are showing it, and this is what they had to do. Because if you want to force change, you can't talk about it. You have to be about it. And this is the first indication in my mind that they're going to have to do something. They have to pay closer attention to the pulse of the city. And the pulse of the city right now is your team doesn't have a heartbeat. The desire to support this team doesn't have a heartbeat. And you're on life support in a lot of ways, and you better start acting quick and get the defibs out whatever way you need to get this thing going back in the right direction. And it's not. Because the pictures I saw pregame, I was so giddy with how empty it was in that building going, now they have to take notice.
You would think so. I mean, tickets sold were still over 60,000. Eric the Dog Walker saying fourth quarter matters for Mills. He needs some success. He should be playing against backups anyway. He looks like a mediocre Pac-12 quarterback right now. I mean, flat out. And I know people are bashing Tim Kelly a little bit for having lack of creativity. He doesn't have a choice because there's just lack of talent in this offense. A couple of texts, 713-780-ESPN if you want to call or text, 713-780-3776. How over the Texans are you? One texter saying, my parents have had season tickets since the inception of the Texans. I go to a couple games every season. I went yesterday, and that was the most pathetic showing I have ever seen from the fan base. More Rams fans than Texans. Crazy.
Good. I mean, bags overheads.
Yeah, there were bags overhead saying sell the team.
We were laughing about it, but saying, you know what? I wouldn't be mad at anybody that did it. I saw a guy on Twitter that said that they had shirts professionally done up that said Fire Easterby. It was one of the most popular things going on at the game where everybody going, what's the website? How do I get one of those? I want one of those too. That should be sending a message to Cal McNair and his wife in their little luxury suite in the end zone, thinking everything's all hunky-dory and they can take a nap in the third quarter and no one's going to care or notice about the product on the field. The product on the field is terrible, and I understand that a lot of that was dictated by what Bill O'Brien left behind. But at the same time, you have to be committed to knowing right from wrong as a professional sports team, both from a business perspective and a football perspective. I don't care how much Jack Easterby is your best friend and he's become in your circle, but there's a difference between being in your circle and being in the middle of your business, in your football operations, when everybody inside football, outside football, and covering football knows this guy is an idiot, and he doesn't belong anywhere on the football side of any franchise.
And, I mean, I think it starts from the top, too, right? I mean, the more and more Absolutely. We hear Cal talk, the more and more you realize that there's not a whole lot of brains at the top there. Adam with a different approach, texting in, 713-780-ESPN. I'm not discouraged with the Texans. I'm optimistic. Optimistic for this year to be over. Deshaun, with the possibilities to move him for high draft picks, and as Cal calls her, maybe mother will fire him and replace him with a brother that has sports knowledge.
Brother doesn't want any part of it.
He doesn't. It's a sinking ship right now with what's going on over at the at NRG and over at Kirby. 713-780-3776. Just how discouraged are you with where the Houston Texans are? Look, at the beginning of the season, not that I had any encouragement for what the Texans were going to be. I expected them to be a last-place team in the AFC South. Maybe I thought that they could come close to winning four games and coming close to that Vegas total, but that's not even the point. The point is everybody that has half a brain should have expected the Houston Texans to be a bottom dweller in the AFC. Maybe they can compete with Jacksonville. Maybe you can beat them once or twice throughout the season, but not a good team. Everybody should have known that. My encouragement was, okay, this is the hard rebuild this organization needs, the hard reset. Nick Caserio, you know, football mind, comes from Belichick. This is the guy that could at least bring some fresh air to this organization. And more you see of Nick Caserio and the moves that he's making, it starts to give me the doubts, too. Like those little red flags that I was nitpicking throughout the training camp and the start of the season. Oh, you're being too nitpicky. Who cares that he's trading a sixth rounder for Ryan Finley? Those little red flags start to add up. I'm starting to believe I was foolish for giving Nick Caserio the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I mean, you and I playfully went back and forth on the win-loss totals.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, look, we hated doing it. We hated being realists, right? We hated saying the only game they're going to be favored in all season was the opener, and you and I both picked them to win it where no one else did because we thought this was one of those two games you're talking about against Jacksonville. But from that point forward, again, I didn't want to be the negative nanny. I didn't want, for all of the football fanatics in this town, I didn't want to be the guy that pooped on your parade. But I came up with Embrace the Suck for a reason. Because part of it is part of the process. You have to, right? To hit that hard reset, you have to accept that there's going to be a year or two that are going to be really, it's going to be really tough to swallow, but it's in the best interest of the long-term success of the franchise. But on top of that, you thought you got the right people, at least one of the right guys in Caserio, that's going to do it the right way. Stockpile draft picks, get rid. Look, he did a great job in the offseason of trying to trim the fat on a lot of massive contracts that as much as he could without having too much dead cap issues to deal with, he was trimming fat left and right from the Bill O'Brien era, from the really bad, bad contracts. But then when you see, like you said, with the trades that he made or didn't make, and the amount of trades that were just basically draft picks ended up throwing away because you didn't get anything that you kept, or you traded for a guy that you knew had a significant injury that had continued to deal with the injury, yet you traded for him anyway, and lo and behold, that injury flares again, and then a couple of weeks later, he's no longer on your roster. To everything that you're hearing internally, as soon as a player leaves, without completely crapping all over them, they are sending subliminal messages left and right that that place, that culture, that environment is very, very detrimental to the team. It is toxic. And that is not something for a new regime. Toxic is normally a regime that's been there too long, hung around through good times, and then all of a sudden it's getting bad times. And at a certain point, whether it's a whole lot of I don't care or for whatever the reason is, you got to pull the plug and say, okay, this whole culture has got to change. You're hearing the culture's got to change by the same guys that created the culture that you're trying to change, with the exception of Caserio and Cully, and it's just not working.
Yeah, just the buttons they're pressing right now, it's not working, and fans losing interest left and right. Look, this is a smart fan base, in my opinion. I really believe that across all three sports. They might lose interest in teams. They might not show up to the arenas until they're good, until they put a competitive product on the floor. But people would get behind a rebuild if it was done the right way. People would get behind it. Like, if Jack Easterby wasn't here, you wouldn't see the lack of interest that this organization has right now. He is the symbolism of why everybody dislikes this organization. Whether that's fair or it's not fair, if you would have got rid of him in the offseason, you bring in a completely different regime, I think people would be on board with it. People would be patient with it. But the fact that he's still around and he's high-fiving the players and he's on the sidelines hooping and hollering, people are sick of it. People realize he's the symbolism of why this organization is where it's at, and they cannot stand it. And that's why nobody's showing up anymore.
I completely agree with you, because if it's anybody else, you're right. Even a David Culley. Look, we tried for how many weeks to say we just like the guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's a likable guy. He you know, he seems like his heart's in the right place. He just wants everything to succeed. And then partially because we saw Easterby around when they won the first game, he's holding the game ball. He's trying to pull Caserio closer when Casario's not that guy and doesn't. He wants the attention to be on the first win ever for this head coach and the locker room that earned the victory. But yet here's Easterby, the attention whore, trying to pull in his new general manager
that he hired.
Yeah, hey, come on, Nikki, come with me because we're part of this. This is what we did. No, that's not what it's all about. It's about you. And the videos that surfaced in the offseason, too, with the, whether you call it, you know, a comedy tour or a preacher tour or whatever he did with the redfish, bluefish, and all the other crap that he did, you know what I'm saying, and all that other stuff. And you're like,
all right, one fish, two fish, redfish, bluefish. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
this is the guy, man. This is the guy that people hear that, see that, and go, what a D-bag. I don't want anything to do with him. And you're right. I completely agree with you. If Cully is just the guy trying hard, if Caserio is taking on this massive undertaking and trying to do the best he can, and Easterby's not a part of the process, and Cal doesn't look like a bumbling buffoon that doesn't care, because I think Cal's the other part of that.
Sure.
I think with Jack, if you can take Cal with you, you could have anybody else on top, even if it's Mrs. McNair, silently leading the troops, right? And then everybody else just trying to do their job and do their part to get this rebuild going. I think the city would be completely 100% behind it, and they would accept the fact that this is part of the lumps you have to take.
And that's why it's hard to bang on Cully. Look, we'll do it, trust me. Yeah. But, I mean, you're breaking down when a guy's calling a timeout for what's a 1-7 team. Like, if he takes that timeout, maybe you're going to be 2-6. Like, that's too narrow-minded. Like, it's looking at the tree, not the forest. The Texans have far bigger issues than David Cully being a bad game manager, which he is. But it's weird to have that conversation with, like, what's really going on. It's like looking at something minor while the entire building is burning down around you. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. How embarrassed are you with your NFL franchise in Houston? We'll also take a look. One team right now in the NFL that would become a Super Bowl contender at the snap of a finger if they traded for Deshaun Watson. Who that team is next? Skiller Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Is the first pitch that he throws to Jose Altuve is cranked out of the ballpark.
The Houston Astros take on the Atlanta Braves in Game 6 of the World Series. First pitch is Tuesday at 7:09.
Swing and a miss. Throw down the tag. They got him. They got him at second.
Hear every single pitch right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
A strike him out. Throw him out. Inning ending. Double play.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Second and 10, they bring it. It's picked up, giving Brady time, and he's intercepted. P.J. Williams still going all the way. He's in. Touchdown, New Orleans.
Who dat? Superdome was wild yesterday as they beat the Bucs 36-27. Saints' third straight win in a row. The Bucs fall for just the second time. Bad news, though. Jameis Winston tore his ACL, MCL, tore both of them. He'll be out for the season. Didn't stop him from participating in the post-game celebration, though, in the locker room. That was great. Trevor Siemian saved the day. Not a long-term solution here, though. So, you have the Saints.
But a savvy pickup, right?
Sure. Savvy. I mean, he's a good backup. But
he's not the backup. He's the third string, which gives Sean Payton a little extra credit because you had Taysom Hill who was out with a concussion.
Yeah.
The fact that you'd go three deep with a veteran quarterback, really, even if it's just for one game, paid off big for the Saints.
But how much does it hurt their ceiling? The fact that Trevor Siemian, for the time being, is going to be the starting quarterback for this team, and even if Taysom Hill comes back, the ceiling that you have for this team. Deshaun Watson, we've heard the trade rumors kind of dying down. Nobody expects Miami to trade for him. Nobody expects Carolina to trade for him. Even if one of those teams traded for him, it's not going to elevate either one of those franchises to be a Super Bowl contender this season. The one team in the NFL that if they pulled the trigger for Deshaun Watson and could become a Super Bowl contender at the snap of a finger, it'd be the New Orleans Saints. They have the team around that quarterback position that if they brought in a quarterback who's a top five quarterback in the NFL, it could elevate them to that spot, to the top echelon of the NFL. Couldn't happen for Carolina. It couldn't happen for Miami. It couldn't happen for Philadelphia. But if there's one team that could make the move at the deadline and make themselves a bona fide Super Bowl contender right now, it's the New Orleans Saints who are in need of a quarterback.
It's a good point, and it's something that you would think that now knowing what they know about where we are with Jameis Winston and the fact that he's not going to be walking through that locker room door the rest of the season, and Taysom Hill wasn't going to be your every down quarterback anyway, otherwise he'd have been selected at the start of the year, right? So I think it's a very valid point. Now, the flip side of that, Jeremy, is are you going to be pleased with what you get in return? Because, one, they've depleted a lot of their draft picks over the next several years because of guys that they were trying to bring in and help to fortify this team, either to give Drew Brees a push in his last season and or to fortify the rest of the roster. So now you've got to worry about that. Also, because they're a good team, they won, they beat the Bucs yesterday, so they're in the upper echelon record-wise of the NFC. So therefore, whatever you get from them, your picks aren't going to be ideally where you'd like them to be when you're dealing with teams in the offseason, when you know where they're picking and how many teams that need a quarterback are in the top five or the top three or the top ten, and you can go, okay, that means something to me, as opposed to, again, I make the reference because it's what everybody knows, in the Harden trade. When you're dealing with the Nets and you know those first-round picks are really glorified second-round picks because they're at the very, very back end of the first round based on how good the Nets are going to be, as opposed to dealing with lottery teams that are terrible all year that can give you more of what you're looking for instead of appeasing quarterback and team who he's going to.
That would be the hang-up if I'm Nick Casario and I'm the Houston Texans, because the Saints do have their future first-rounders in the next 3 years, but those future first-rounders you would expect with a team that's already good – with a team that would add a top five quarterback in the NFL, you're looking at picking in the last half of the first round, maybe even like the last five picks of the first round. So that would be the hangup if I'm Nick Caserio. But if I'm Sean Payton, I really want to get aggressive and I really want to win a Super Bowl here. Maybe you offer that Herschel Walker package where you're looking at the next 3 years of first, seconds, and third, something crazy like that. Look, I'm not thinking it's going to happen, but they're the only team in the NFL that needs a quarterback that would bring in a quarterback and instantly become a Super Bowl contender. There was a big trade already today. The NFL trade deadline tomorrow at 3. And look, Nick Caserio needs to be a Will and Dylan son of a gun. The Los Angeles Rams are always Will and Dylan son of a guns. They traded for Von Miller, the rush defender, going to L.A. for a second and third round pick. Pretty good return for Denver, not a playoff team. It's the last year of Von Miller's contract, too, by the way. And the Broncos doing something that the Houston Texans need to do, and they did do it for Bradley Roby. So it's not like this new idea that the Texans aren't doing. They did do it for Roby. The Broncos are paying $9 million of the remaining $9.7 million of the Von Miller contract in order to get better draft pick compensation. This, in my opinion, a win-win for both teams. You get a second and a third for a veteran in the last year of a deal who's going to leave you in free agency anyways. And meanwhile, the Rams add Von Miller to Aaron Donald and then Jalen Ramsey in the back end. That defense is scary to go along with that high-octane offense.
Yeah, even if it's just for half of a season, they based on paper alone, and we talk about, again, all the time about on paper, that looks like it has the makings of one of the best defenses maybe in the last 10, 15 years because of the fact, like you said, the impact players in every level from the front line to the linebackers to the corners, you've got guys that are all world at their position, and it just strengthens everything that they already have offensively with the fact that they've got an offensive mind like McVay, and they've got their quarterback now in Stafford, and they've got a ton of receivers, including the record-breaking numbers that Cooper Kupp is putting up through eight games. This is the makings of a one-year go-for-it. Hey, the Super Bowl's, by the way, in our backyard, too. What a way to make a splash, make a statement, and do what everybody in L.A. would love to see us do, but do it in our own backyard. We're in go-for-it mode. And so kudos to them. And if that's all you had to give up, I'm sure there are a lot of other teams going, boy, I might want to get in on that deal. I mean, I need pass rush. If it only cost me a second and a third, I'd look at it.
See, I think a second and third's high. I feel like that's pricey for a guy that's in the last year of his deal. So
you do?
I mean, a second
and
a third.
If I'm Green Bay and I know how many pass rushers they've already lost this year, either for the year or, you know, Za'Darius Smith was one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, hasn't played a down this year because he had back surgery. They're hoping to have him back. This is the reason why they went and got Whitney Mercilus. They've got all kinds of linebacker issues. If I know it cost me a second and a third down the road, but that I can solve this in a year that's hyper-important to Aaron Rodgers, I'm kicking myself for not making that deal.
Look, it's a win-now move. I like it for both teams. I call it a win-win. 713-780-ESPN. When we return, we're going to be joined by Jeremy Booth. He covers the Astros for KHOU Channel 11, the Extra Base Podcast. He's a former big league scout as well. Jeremy Booth, when we come back, it's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.